Hey folks, Jeff here. Welcome to a special episode of The Left Show. In these midweek supplementals, I'm trying to interview as many candidates as I can before the 2026 election. In this series, I'm attempting to talk to as many of the Democratic candidates in Utah as I can who are running for Utah's newly redrawn Congressional District 1. I've sent invitations to as many candidates as I can to join me in what should be the friendliest interview they've ever had. Who are they? What do they stand for? Are they centrist corporate Democrats or left-leaning progressives with a vision to improve the lives of the American people? On a larger scale, I'm also sending invites to candidates all across the country. I want to talk to as many folks as I can who want to change things for the better, who believe in a larger tent, and believe that the American people are more important than the corporate donor class. I hope you enjoy these conversations, learn a thing or two about the people running to represent you, and I appreciate your attention to this matter.
Pick a window.
The Left Show is not intended for youngsters. It's not intended for the sensitive. It's certainly not intended for right-wingers. Use your own discretion. Awful swearing.
You know who the best-looking person sitting up there was? Who was it with the cowboy hat?
No, J.M. Bell.
J.M. Bell. Mm-hmm. I don't know who that is.
He hosts a podcast.
Well, he was good-looking.
You pompous, stuck-up, snot-nosed, giant, twerp, scumbag, fuck-faced, dickhead, asshole!
Gentlemen, this is Democracy Manifest.
For what reason? What is the charge? Eating a meal? A succulent Chinese meal?
You are listening to the world's greatest political podcast, The Left Show. I am continuing my attempt to interview everybody running for Utah's Congressional District 1. In this particular supplemental episode, we're going to be talking to Luis Villarreal. I will let him introduce himself and tell you folks a little bit about himself. Welcome.
Hello. My name is Luis Villarreal. I am a candidate from West Valley City, Utah. I was born and raised here in Utah. A Democratic Socialist, Latino, and son of immigrants. Both of my parents immigrated from Mexico. They were undocumented for most of my life. My father only got his papers as of September of last year. So I'm very close to a lot of issues regarding immigration and how they've affected my life. But I'm also, I grew up doing blue collar work as I went through school. And I'm now working as a software engineer. Mm-hmm. So my life has really been paved by what is a Utahn, and specifically what is a Utahn from the West Side. And I think that has to do a lot with this current race, the CD1. I think rough estimates are like just a hair over 50% of the population are Westsiders. And so I've done my best as the only candidate from the West Side to try to represent what that is for me, you know, focus on unions. I'd love to see an expansion of blue collar work in the world. And I'd love to see the Democratic Party win back blue collar workers, because we've culturally lost them. And I think our values align heavily with blue collar workers if we are to focus on the right things.
Absolutely. Okay. So the way this breaks down is I've got five specific questions. These can often turn into sub questions, but I've got five. The first one is, can you name a specific issue where you'd be willing to oppose Democratic leadership if it conflicts with your values? And, like, you know, kind of what does that look like in practice? Where are you willing to fight back against the party and the way that they do business?
Man, I think the biggest one's got to be Citizens United, money interest, especially when it relates to AIPAC and stuff like that. Like, the Israel conversation as a whole kind of falls into the same boat as corporate interests and corporate lobbying. I think a lot of the Democratic establishment today is a little bit more interested in how do we maintain – these pillars of economic power on our side, rather than worry about the populace and how to get the vote. And I think we've seen that with multiple presidential campaigns being focused around a message for the people, but not enough to fall away from corporate interests. And so for me, the biggest thing as a democratic socialist is to really focus in on reigning in corporate power in a way that I think a lot of establishment Democrats and liberals at large aren't super interested in. You know, I think generally speaking, a lot of democratic liberals, you know, have good ideas, and I'm here to work with them. I'm not super abrasive in that manner. But I think we really need to take steps to lighten the economic injustice kind of happening from corporate level and investor level and billionaire level politics. So for me, the biggest pushback would be in terms of getting moneyed power out of Congress, and push for federalizing campaigns. All federal campaigns, I think, should be federalized. I really like the system that Colorado uses, where each citizen gets a voucher to give. I think it's Colorado that does that, and they can give their voucher to per race to the candidate that they like, and you know, you fundraise just strictly off of you know, the constituents, and the constituents don't have to pull money out of their pocket. So I'd like to see a federalized system. Just, you know, I'd like to fight for getting money out of politics as much as we can, because I think the people need to be the ones leading.
I've been doing this a long time, and I agree with you. Citizens United has caused more problems in a shorter amount of time than just about anything else dumb that we've done, save, you know, slavery and the Civil War. Yeah. Okay. Second question. If you had to pick a progressive policy, Medicaid for all, Green New Deal, student debt cancellation, you know, whatever it is that's your priority, but your advocacy for it might cost you politically. Like, what policy are you willing to spend your political capital on, you know, if you get elected?
Universal healthcare, for sure. I think more than anything, that needs to happen as soon as possible. I mean, man, I'm from, my parents are from Mexico, where they've had a broken, albeit, but they have had a universal healthcare system since the early 2000s. And so growing up, seeing my family counterparts in Mexico, I mean, I've got a cousin who was born with no nose, no eyes, and severely mentally disabled, right? My aunt always had the resources to take care of him and was always given assistance from the government to do so. He was only expected to live 8 years. He is in his late teens now. And so it's like, I grew up seeing the rest of the world have solutions. And to think that the wealthiest nation on the planet can't provide a proper single payer healthcare system is absurd to me. And, you know, even just coming from, I mean, even looking at this liberally, not looking at this from a socialist or leftist, you know, purview, a single payer tax or a single payer insurance system makes it much more straightforward for there to be competition in the pharmaceutical and doctor labor market, right?
Yeah.
There's so much that we lose by having these monopolies of insurance, because they're playing the game. They're the ones making every single decision. Every doctor's office has to play ball by the insurance company's name. Every pharmaceutical company has to play ball by the insurance maker, the insurance company's game, right? And so we are slowly careening, and man, we were slowly careening for a long time. At this point, it feels like we've completely fallen into the pit of just having to do everything that the insurance companies want us to do. Every single American is paying out the wazoo, out of their paychecks. I'm paying I'm married and I have a son, close to $300 out of each of my paychecks. Yep. And my company doubles that, so pays half of it for me. And the insurance company's bleeding me dry. And this is happening to most Americans. I think Medicare for all is a wonderful, step in the right direction, I'd like to see a robust single-payer insurance system. Not, but I won't die on a hill, right? I want a more robust system, but I won't die on a hill. I'd gladly take Medicare for All in the current presentation that it's been given in.
Sure.
But I'd like to see that be a march towards a robust single-payer system.
It's incremental progress is how government works. And I am a firm believer that it can work faster, but it's still going to be paced. Medicare for All, I think, is that first step that will probably be unpopular in the short term, like Obamacare was. And then over time, people will be like, oh, no, this is actually great. You know, because my thing with Obamacare is pre-existing condition discrimination that existed before Obamacare made it against the law. I have diabetes. And so every time I'd move to another job, you know, they're like, well, we don't have to cover you. It's a pre-existing condition, you know. And so that changed my life for the better. But I'm still doing co-pays. I'm still paying too much every month, you know. And so I do. I like the way that you're headed with that. And I like that it's not and everything or nothing position with you. I think that shows a lot of progress too.
And well, it's also like when we think back to Obamacare, realistically, most people's like number one saving grace from Obamacare was that the pre-existing medical condition clause. But it didn't fundamentally fix anything. It just gave tax credits to the insurance companies, which then continued to abuse that and led us into the system where we're at today. And even if Obamacare wasn't rescinded, even if the ACA credits still existed, a lot of people don't have healthcare right now. We're back into the same bubble we were when it launched. And it's because it did not fundamentally fix the issue. These insurance companies who are there for profit have no mechanism that guides them in the interest of people. There just isn't. The only mechanism that guides them is shareholder interests and profit.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. Absolutely. Okay. Number three. When you talk about like economic justice, you know, are there specific policies that you'd fight for that directly shift power or wealth and not just regulate it? You know, what does economic justice mean to you in concrete terms?
So this is probably the strongest piece of my campaign where I've talked to the most people. I've knocked about 5,000, maybe a hair over 5,000 doors throughout West Valley. I've made phone bank calls to the West Side, probably 3,000 or so with my volunteers. The biggest focus for me coming from the West Side is I think we really, really, really need to do some FDR-style public works projects. I would love to see a federal project where the government hires workers directly, buys resources directly, builds homes, and sells them at zero profit. This does not cost the government anything other than an initial investment. And on top of that, the government could then provide the mortgage at a very low interest rate, throw a 2% on there, right? And suddenly we're generating money off of providing a public competition to the private housing market and providing affordable housing for folks whilst creating so many jobs. Here in the west side of CD1, you've got a lot of blue collar tradesmen. Yeah. You've got a lot of package handlers. You've got a lot of construction workers. You've got a lot of mechanics. Most folks in the blue collar work know that the best jobs tend to be those union jobs. Now, does everybody have the most positive view of unions? Not necessarily. And unions have been eroded in their powers for a long time. But people generally understand that unions are supposed to be good. And a lot of the union jobs, in West Valley, everybody knows the best package handling job is UPS.
Yes.
Because that bad boy is union. Everybody knows that, right? And so I would love to see an expansion of the federal blue-collar workforce in a project like this, which would directly build homes. But I'd also love to make sure that they're all unionized workers.
Yeah.
to make sure, because you could pay these workers more than the private market's paying them. You could provide them more benefits, and you could provide all of this while still building homes cheaper than what Ivory Homes will sell them at. And yep. Not only that, but we could also revitalize our cities, right? Look at all of these areas in on the west side where the homes are almost near 100 years old. I would love to see the opportunity for these homes to be, you know, purchased from all of the homeowners, redeveloped, so you get fresh water lines, you got fresh infrastructure, electrical, internet access, and then suddenly just boom, build a whole bunch of really nice, well-built houses for really cheap and sell them for cheap. And boom, you've got tons of homes for young Americans, middle-aged Americans that have more mobility. Because the housing market's not just an issue for young folks. You know, people in their middle age or in their later age, so how many people are trapped in their current home because they now have no mobility because they either got their mortgage at a bad time, they're still paying off their mortgage, and now house prices are insane. And with the ballooning of house prices, the gap between different size homes only gets greater. Right. And so upgrading into the next home, that's going to be a significant investment. Whereas if all of the prices were a little bit lower, the difference between an increasement is less. Right. And so there's so many aspects to why breaking this housing crisis would help so many Americans. And we could fix the housing crisis whilst also fixing the job market crisis that we're facing. Hey, I'm a software engineer. We're staring down the barrel of a gun of AI taking a bunch of white collar jobs. Now, does this mean that we just lay down and take pity that was it? That was the American project? Suddenly a whole bunch of people are going to be unemployed? No. We used to build things as a country, yeah. Right? Yeah. Why aren't we building homes? Why aren't we building more highways and train systems? Why isn't the government investing in creating jobs and projects that help better our cities, our country, our transport, our infrastructure? Our internet infrastructure is degrading rapidly. Our electrical infrastructure is degrading rapidly. Our home market is degrading rapidly. People can't buy homes. The median home buyer for the first time home buyer is, what was it, 39, 40 something?
Pretty high.
Yeah, and I might be getting that wrong. It might be higher than that. I can't remember off of the top of my head. It's been a little bit since that report came out. But so for me, you know, there really needs to be an expansion, you know, of how we view federal investment into both the job market and the construction industry, the infrastructure industry, those blue collar trades. And I think if the Democrats really, really tightened up and really focused on that, I think we could win back the blue collar world 120%.
We as Democrats have a long history of repairing the damage that Republicans have done to the economy, and yet every time we get out there to message, we get we get beat up because they lie and say the opposite and people believe it because we message ineffectively. You know,
I would actually argue mm-hmm. It's not only the bad messaging. I think that is an important component of it. But the Democrats have failed to do anything substantial to fix a lot of blue collar issues.
Also that.
You know, like we can't, like, look, it's just like we can't sit here under like, yeah, we don't message well enough. Okay, but we're also not doing enough.
Yeah.
The blue collar world, unions have been degraded over the past 70 years to nothing. Most unions don't have the power or the protections necessary to do their job in all of their industry and expand.
Yeah.
Every time we hear of a new union, a new place unionizing, like Starbucks, funnily enough, I work at the company where some of the unionizing that happened within Starbucks used the tool that I actually work on producing. Starbucks is not very happy with my company, but it's not our fault. Our tool is for another, you know, our tool is for something else. Workers just happen to use it that way. And so there is this new world that we live in where Democrats have culturally lost the blue collar workers, but also have not done anything to win them over. Chuck Schumer said, for every blue collar worker we lose, we'll gain two in the suburbs. who do you think lives in the suburbs, man? Blue collar workers aren't like in just rural areas. There are more blue collar jobs in the cities than there are outside of cities.
Yep.
All the construction, engineering, mechanical work, engineering work, like all of that infrastructure happens in a city. There's less of those types of jobs. Now, in the rural areas, there's animal husbandry and agriculture. Those are important jobs as well. But, you know, this idea of the blue collar worker being outside of the city or outside of the suburbs is ludicrous.
Yes.
I would argue the suburbs are the core of blue collar work.
Hey folks, Jeff here. None of the podcasts on Defenestrate Media were created by a big company or a moneyed network. There's no corporate backing here. The shows, The Left Show, the world's greatest comic book podcast, and I Told You So, exist because we thought that it would be fun to sit down with microphones and talk about the shit that we care about. Politics, comics, culture. Over time, something pretty amazing happened, and a community has formed around these shows. Listeners who come back every week, people who argue with us, laugh with us, send us messages, and share the episodes with friends. Recently, we got a couple of shout-outs by some bigger shows, which has reinvigorated interest in what we do here. It means that there's a lot more ears paying attention to the words that we throw out. It's a lot of growth, but growth means that what we've done is sort of hit the limit of what we can do with both the gear we have, the software we use, and the hosting that we've been running now for years. So we're asking for help. We're raising funds to upgrade our podcast hosting. We need a lot more bandwidth. We need two new hard drives for both production and storage. And then we have three pieces of software that we use that cost a bloody fortune annually to build the shows. We've always been listener supported. That's how independent podcasts like this survive. So if the shows have ever made you laugh, made you think, or just kept you company while you were driving somewhere, maybe consider pitching in this round. A few dollars helps when there's a lot of listeners that are a part of it. Look, do us a favor. Navigate yourself over to theleftshow.com, click on that big banner for the spring fundraiser. And we're not just asking for help, we're offering prizes for people that do help. So take a look right there at the bottom of the page. You'll see everything that we're offering for those that come to our rescue. With that in mind, thank you, seriously, for helping to keep independent media alive. What if there was one place where comic book fans could get everything? News, reviews, debates, and deep dives every single week.
And not just we read one issue and Googled the rest kind of takes. We're talking 15 years deep, over 600 episodes.
That's right. The world's greatest comic book podcast has been breaking down Marvel, DC, indie books, movies, and fandom culture long before it was cool.
Whether you're a lifelong collector,
a casual fan who just saw the latest superhero movie,
or someone trying to figure out where to even start,
we have got you covered.
We don't always agree, which makes it way more fun.
Yeah, way more fun.
New episodes every Tuesday.
Real opinions, real conversations.
Zero gatekeeping.
Check out the world's greatest comic book podcast at thecomicbookpodcast.com.
Hey kids, comics!
Yeah, we do. I mean, it's I've lived out in the burbs and I've lived downtown, and everywhere I go, there's somebody who works for a living,
mm-hmm.
you know, and when I get out, I grew up on a farm, you know, I know farm workers. I know union guys. I know blue collar guys. I know builders. I know guys in construction. And the one thing that they all have in common is they feel like they're getting hosed by the system because they're getting hosed by the system. And when Dems do get elected into office and we take majorities, it's like we take a nap. We're like, oh, okay, whew, no more bad right-wing legislation. Let's go ahead and coast until we lose the next election.
Well, and then they get fidgety and they adjust the numbers and they make sure that the financiers make a good money and the investment market and the stock market is making sure that it's doing an uppy and whatever. But they don't fix the fundamental issues that are affecting workers, because the Democratic Party is full of a whole bunch of party insiders that have fundamentally went they fundamentally have become the wine and cheese party. They're more interested in party inside politics and making sure the donors are happy than fighting for working people, right? Bernie Sanders has been lauded by the Democratic establishment for what? The man has been up here preaching for working class politics since day one.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, man. He has a closer cultural relationship with those blue collar workers than Chuck Schumer ever could.
I agree.
These are city elites that do not understand what a blue collar day in the life is like. And I'll tell you what, I grew up ranching as well. You know, my family in Mexico, they don't come from the city. They come from the ranch, right? So I've got cowboy hats, cowboy boots. You know, I am a cowboy, true and true. Mexican one, but still a cowboy. You know, only two countries on the planet that got the cowboys, right? So I'm a Mexican. I'm a cowboy. I grew up doing blue-collar work. I grew up around a lot of Republicans because they're culturally Republicans. I'm a Democratic Socialist, and I have an easier time sometimes talking to conservatives than I do to liberals who fervently oppose socialism. Because a lot of Republicans will just like many of them are like libertarian focused, or many of them are in some senses agreeable to socialism. They just don't trust the government to implement it. And you know what? How could you at this point? But that doesn't mean we shouldn't fight for creating a government that is trustworthy.
No, I absolutely agree with that. Outstanding. Outstanding answer. So let's move on to question four. Where are you on LGBTQ plus rights, especially, and this is my selfish question, especially transgender rights?
Oh, man, transgender people are people like everybody else. I grew up with a gay uncle. I grew up around queer friends. I grew up, my wife is bisexual. I grew up, you know, 100% in and around the queer community.
Mm-hmm.
I think fundamentally the number one thing that's going to help them and help us get past these issues are to resolve the economic crisis that we're in, because the treatment of the LGBTQ community alongside the immigrant community and all other disenfranchised communities as the scapegoats for the economic crisis will not stop until people's needs are met. Because fundamentally, as they strip the rights of queer folks, as they strip the rights of immigrants, not only must we be a strong voice in saying, no, hey, don't do that.
Right.
We also need to cut at the core of what is causing these issues. And what's causing these issues is that voters on the Republican side of the aisle have been disenfranchised, are looking at an economy that is worse than ever, are facing down the barrel of a gun of a cruel, cruel world, and they are being led astray and saying that the LGBTQ plus community are doing things to your children and this, that, and the other, and whatever. But you know what? If we all were financially stable, secure, and had our lives, you know, reasonably put together in the structure of the world, right? I don't think we would be bickering and bantering each other about this stuff. You know, I grew up a lot around a lot of conservatives with queer children.
Yeah. Yep.
Before all of this stuff blew up, before MAGA conservatism here in Utah particularly.
Yes.
There were so many conservatives who were learning. They were on the path to understanding their children. Is it perfect in every scenario? No. And I also think if, you know, especially, you know, I'm 26, so it wasn't too long ago that I was 18 and I had queer friends moving out of their parents' house into unstable situations with seven other roommates
to try to
make it out on their own and then get away from abuse. I think if they were more financially stable, they would have had much, much better mobility and options at the age of 18.
Yeah, which they desperately
need.
And
much better mental health.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So for me, it's not only do we need to make sure that we're standing up for these issues when they happen. I think Democrats for a long time have been weak on LGBTQ plus issues, especially in the trans rights issues. There is no world where we need to stand down. There is no world where we need to back off. There is no world where we need to say, well, okay, trans rights are optically bad, so we need to back off of it. No, like, shut up. Those are people. And I care about people. I want to make sure every single person is living a better life tomorrow than they did yesterday.
Looking at you, Gavin Newsom.
Complain?
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you. All right, last question. What's one issue where you think, I mean, I normally say progressive, I'll go with socially democratic socialist as well, but where do you think progressive types need to be more honest, strategic, or self-critical? What's something that progressives are constantly getting wrong?
Let me tell you that. I think, and it's funny, you've kind of struck a chord. I'm endorsed by Progressive Victory. They're a nationwide progressive organization that has helped campaigns like Zoran Mamdani, Katie Wilson. They do phone banking and volunteer work as a PAC. They recently did the Choose Your Fighter rally, where they had like Hassan Piker, Vosh, and several candidates and current politicians, Rokana namely. And speaking with a lot of folks there, a big blind side to leftists and progressives as a whole, which I think is changing, especially with some comments that Bernie Sanders had made recently, is unions. I do not believe we have a leftist project in this country without revitalizing and fixing unions.
Yeah, I agree.
It is worker collectivism that helps people fundamentally understand what socialism is. What is collectivism and what are the benefits that come from it? Culturally speaking, there's no conversation where we shift people over to the left without them understanding fundamentally what that is. Right? Like I said, I come from West Valley, where I grew up around blue collar workers and Republicans and conservatives, whatever. Fundamentally speaking, if they're in a union, they at least get some of the stuff that I'm talking a little bit better than if they're not.
Yeah.
And I can pull them over. I've talked to so many Republicans this election cycle, and, you know, obviously I'm focused on the primary. So here in Utah, Republicans can vote in the Democratic primary if they request a ballot and then choose not to vote in the Republican primary. And I've told lots of Republicans, hey, you're in CD1. A Democrat's winning this. At the very least, if you like the stuff that I'm talking about, focusing on the blue collar men and women, get a Democratic primary ballot and check on my name, and I'll make sure I fight for the working class. I'll make sure I fight for the blue collar workers. And that, talking about unions and blue collar work, has gotten me so many wins with Republicans. Because right now, oh my goodness, right now, even Republicans know how bad Republicans are. Everybody knows that they're getting hosed by the system. Everybody knows it, right? But they just think Democrats are hosing them just as much as the Republicans are hosing them.
Yeah.
And that's where me being a Democratic Socialist, it's different. It's outside of the purview of, oh, you're just a Democrat, oh, you're just a Republican. I'm able to come in and have these conversations and be candid, like, hey, you're getting hosed by the system. Let's find something new, right? And then on top of that, I tell them, hey, I'm focused on unions and blue-collar work. They hear that. They go, I'm in a union. Or I've worked in a union before, and I'm a blue-collar man or woman. What does he have to say? And I say, look, I just want to expand blue-collar work. I want to create jobs. I want to do the old school, you know, like FDR, build the nation up. I want universal healthcare so we all have, you know, access to healthcare. And I think universal healthcare is you said a little earlier, it might be sort of negative PR, but I don't think so. I think most Americans are waking up to universal healthcare being the correct option forward. I think politicians themselves are the only ones who are behind on this.
Yeah, sure.
And so I'm seeing massive amount of growth, and what Utah needs is growth in the Democratic Party. So my campaign in its core has always been, how do we grow the Democratic Party here moving forward? And not only that, how do we solve the issues? And I think those are intrinsically linked. If you solve the issues, people will recognize you've fixed issues and move to our side. And so for me, that I think unions and blue-collar worker are severely missed out on in regards to leftists and the way that the leftist project is moving forward.
You know what? I mean, I'll absolutely go along like that. When things are going good, you don't feel an inclination to find somebody to blame for it. You know, but when things are going bad, you want it to be anybody's fault but your own. And the thing is, with the way the economy is now and the way that things are working, it's not speaking to John Q. voter. It's not your fault, dude. It's not. And no, I like that. Fix what's broke and people will be happier. I mean, it really boils it down. All right.
Part of my message, and I think people are, I think that's resonating with people. If you take a look, Obama sat down with Ram Amdani and gave him accolades, right? Zoran's whole thing is, hey, I'm not even interested in the party politics of the thing. I'm here for New Yorkers. I'm going to fix what's broken.
Yep.
And people love him for that. And I think that is the future of democratic socialists in this country. It's not something crazy. It's not far off. It's just folks who want to sit down and fix issues, plain and simple.
That's fantastic.
And they think the government should do that.
It's a fantastic message, buddy. Well, we're round about at the end. So if you want to take a couple of minutes and just kind of give your closing speech for why people should vote for you in the primary in June, this is that time.
Sure. Like I said, I'm Luis Villarreal, son of immigrants, born worker. I'm a worker bee. You know, I'm from Utah, and so that's how I identify. I've spent my whole life working towards positivity. And building a career. I'm a husband, I'm a father, and I'm just a regular guy. I am a working class candidate through and through, and I will fight for unions, I will fight for universal health care, and I will fight to fix issues for Utahns, not worry about establishment politics or run around political bullshit. So, you know, I'm the candidate from the West Side, and I'm here to fight for people. So vote for me. Vote for Luis. LuisForUtah.com if you want to throw any donations my way. Sincerely would be appreciated. You need money to win a campaign against the establishment. That's probably the most real thing there is.
No, you absolutely do. And convention presences cost an absurd amount of money and are still super important. But like I said, I like where you're going with a lot of your ideas. I especially like the fact that you're branching out and talking to Republicans, because they are a very important voting block here, whether you agree with them or not. So way to go. Congratulations on your campaign. It looks like you're very serious. You've got great answers. Your Luis for Utah is comprehensive. You got some really good depth of material here. So best of luck in June. I wish you well, and I look forward to seeing you around, not only now, but in the future.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right,
pleasure speaking with you. Seriously, thank you for having me on.
Anytime. Let me know if you got something to say. Appreciate you.
If you've made it this far, you might as well join us on Patreon. Patreon.com/DFenMedia. This episode and more always available at www.theleftshow.com.